Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I am joined in studio by Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations. Walker, good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be on, Ed.
And you know, Walker, we have a special guest, Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now, is back from Canada.
Nice, cool place. You know, I watched the temperatures here in the south while I was up there.
Yes, mockery.
About 40 degrees difference.
40 degrees. Now, and you were up in Nova Scotia?
Nova Scotia, yeah. So, yeah, highs in the 50s, low 60s each day.
I'm actually sweater weather. Struggling with feelings of hatred right now, Fred. I thought the old man was dead, but I just feel like it in this heat.
We went from Halifax to Chicago down to Nashville yesterday, come back, and the pilot on the Chicago-Nashville flight, you know, they give a little weather at destination.
Yeah, right.
He just says, it's hot in Nashville. That's all he said. It's real hot in Nashville.
And probably a few degrees hotter here still.
So. Oh, yeah. But, you know, this time of the year, I've been down here over 20 years, the hope is you look at that calendar, and when it's 22nd is the first day of fall.
Yeah.
So, you know, surely, because of the way the earth is situated with the sun, it's got to get cooler real soon. So I'm still optimistic.
Yeah, it's so dry here in North Mississippi. Some of my trees are shedding leaves just because they're dying.
Uh-huh.
And I joked with my wife. I said, look, it's turning fall. It may be 100 degrees, but look, the leaves are falling.
Yeah,
she said, it's not because of the cold weather.
Yeah, it's we live out in the country a little bit. And so the last little bit before you get to our house is a gravel road. The pavement ends.
Uh-huh.
And man, the dust that kick up.
I know.
It's really bad. I posted on my own personal Facebook page. I don't post a whole lot on there, but when I see something funny, I post it. And somebody sent me something yesterday, I think. Anyway, it was it looked like a one of those little things from a local channel's weather.
Mm-hmm.
And it said 1 week till the first day of fall, and then it had a little asterisk, and then it said, not available in Mississippi. But yeah.
That's about true. That's hey, listen, to our listeners who think about maybe going north for the color tours this time of the year,
yes,
I'll give an update. The trees' colors were starting to change when we were leaving. So in the next 2 weeks, probably it's going to be prime in New England and in the Maritimes of Canada. It'll be beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
I remember those days growing up in New England.
Mm.
Kind of took it for granted because to me, you know, kind of like what Walker's talking about, fall simply meant I had to rake leaves.
Yes.
Mm. You know, but the brilliant colors and stuff, it really is. And people gorgeous. Go up there just for that.
So. And it's a beautiful time of the year to go.
All right. Before we depart from your trip to Canada, tell us a little bit about the a lot of our listeners, including me, aren't always sure exactly what goes on up there in Canada politically. What's happening?
While I was back home visiting, the Prime Minister, it's kind of British tradition up there. They did what they call drop the writ. In other words, the Prime Minister goes to the Governor General's home and announces Parliament's being dissolved, and that's the official start of the election campaign. Now, down here in the United States, we kind of joke about it. The election campaigns never stop.
Right.
Up there, there's a set 6 weeks.
So 6 weeks.
6 weeks. So that started last week. The election's October 21st up there. So it's very definite. Now, there was a time when the Prime Minister kind of had some leeway in all of that, but previous Prime Minister Stephen Harper said, no, we want to do it every 4 or 5 years. I forget what it is. But anyway.
Now Stephen Harper was a conservative.
He was the conservative. Yeah, they make it very simple if you're a conservative liberal on your politics. Up in Canada, it's a capital L Liberal Party, the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, and a capital C Conservative Party. And the leader there is Andrew Scheer. And it's very interesting. The polling up there shows it about even right now. Now, Trudeau, this is his first term in office, but I'm going to be kind. So far, it's been a disaster for him, and I'm being kind. Really, really bad. In fact, the RCMP is considering an investigation in the middle of this election campaign, considering an investigation against the Prime Minister, because basically he fired his Attorney General back several weeks ago because the Attorney General was considering charges against a big company in Justin Trudeau's hometown of Montreal, SNC-Lavalin. And they had some doings with the Libyan government back several years ago. There's a belief of some financial misdoings there. And if they were found guilty, this big company, which employs thousands, they couldn't bid on any federal contracts. So what happened was that Trudeau has a meeting with his attorney general. He doesn't like her attitude towards all of this. And the belief is that he fired her and she was demoted. And so that has created a huge political story up there. And whether that's going to mean a quick end to his time as prime minister remains to be seen.
Okay, so how do the Russians enter into this political? I'm sure they must be involved somehow. They threw the 2016 election to President Trump, clearly, if you believe the mainstream media and the Democrats. So yeah. How did they get involved in the Canadian
election? Well, I think the Russians are probably behind the Liberals because Justin Trudeau is so liberal, he wouldn't care if the Russians came over the top and came down. So, no, but Andrew Scheer, he is very conservative.
Okay.
Stephen Harper, I think, was one of the – he was around during the time of
– Bush, right?
It was Bush-Obama.
Oh, okay.
Years. And I think he was one of the – most conservative national leaders in the world. He was really strong. I don't know what happened to Canadians, but they got rid of him and put in Justin Trudeau. And as I said, he's got a popularity crisis right now.
Now, Justin Trudeau is the son of a former Prime Minister,
Pierre Elliott Trudeau, yeah. And for those who remember Pierre Elliott Trudeau, his son, Justin, every bit as arrogant.
Okay.
Put it that way.
All right. Mm-hmm. So one last question about Canadian politics, because mm-hmm. it is interesting. There are mm-hmm. neighbors to the north. So they don't have, like we would have here, third-party candidates or minor party candidates?
In fact, they do. They have what's called a New Democrat Party. There's actually, it's very interesting, the gentleman who heads that party is East Indian.
Okay.
He is Hindu.
I think I saw a picture of him. He had the turban on. And
Mr. Singh.
Okay.
And then there is...
Oh, wait a second. It just sounds like a James Bond villain.
S-I-N-G-H, I think it is.
Mr. Zing.
Zing.
Ah, I see.
Mr. Zing. And then there's a Green Party, which, like in Europe, is making some gains. The Green Party has at least one or two, I think, members of Parliament, and they're hoping to make some gains, too. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting on election night, October 21st. Up
there. All right. Now, so if we have listeners who are of Indian descent, from India. I am not making fun of Indian names. It's just when you don't have the first name and you say Mr. Zing. Am I alone? Does that not sound like a James Bondville 007 villain?
We lived on the west coast of Canada for many years and became very familiar with Sikhs. He is a Sikh.
Oh, he's a Sikh. Okay.
Yes. And they are some of the most wonderful people.
Right.
Hard workers.
Yeah.
Hard workers. Many of them are farmers. Huh. And so we came to appreciate them very much.
Well, one of the things they must love about America, and I hope this is not, you know, just something that the stereotype of mm-hmm. India, mm-hmm. but everything I've ever read the cities are extremely crowded.
Yes.
So I would think that coming to the United States where there's so much open space mm-hmm. would be a real blessing. So I have no doubt that they're happy to be here.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. all right. Fred, let's move on to news in this
day.
Country.
Yep. Yes. Well, kind of on the theme of election, Israel had an election yesterday. And all I can say at this hour, the results are still unclear. But it did not go, what we do know, it did not go the way that Prime Minister Netanyahu had hoped. He wanted a majority. And right now they're still counting, so I want to be very careful about this. But it looks like at the very the very best that we're going to see is likely a minority government. Now, we talked about Canada and all the parties. They've got a lot of parties there in Israel. And right now, there is basically a tie between Netanyahu's Likud party and Benny Gantz's blue and white parties. And I guess if you wanted to describe Likud as being conservative and the blue and white as being more liberal. And so they're tied on this. So what's going to happen, it looks like, somebody is going to have to cobble together some kind of unity government out of this. Now, who's going to do that is anybody's guess at this point. But it's Israeli politics are always tense.
Right.
Because of so many parties and so many factions, and as we've talked about on this program, many members of the Knesset are Muslim, they're Arabs.
Right.
And they don't like Netanyahu.
Yeah.
And there was apparently a large turnout amongst those Arab voters this time. So they're likely not going to favor the Likud party. So where it all comes down, we're not sure yet. We may have the final numbers by the end of the day today, but... for sure, it looks like Prime Minister Netanyahu did not get the majority government that he wanted.
Okay. Hmm. All right. Well, okay. We'll continue to watch that. Like you said, when you have multiple parties, it's not always clear right away. Like we have here, Republican, Democrat, well, it looks like it's going to be 52-48. But you got multiple parties, and then you got to cobble together a government where you have a coalition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have a majority, but your party, your minority party, and our party together. So it's a whole different kind
it's
of
more
way
complicated
of thinking.
Yeah, than this.
They have a president in Israel, and it's going to be his job to kind of decipher who has the best chance of cobbling together some kind of unity government. And so this will continue to unfold this story over the next several days.
Okay.
Let's bring it back home to Washington here. And the big story yesterday involved one of President Trump's former campaign heads, Corey Lewandowski. And I've been looking at some of the excerpts. He was called into the House Judiciary Committee yesterday because they are considering an impeachment move against President Trump. And they wanted him to testify about his conversations with Trump with regards to the Russia investigation. Mr. Lewandowski, I think he had a good time yesterday. His hearing went 4 or 5 hours. The chairman of that committee is Democrat Nadler, but others on the committee include Sheila Jackson Lee. Some of our listeners may be familiar with her. She's out of Houston, Texas. A combative, I guess this is the best way to describe it. It was a combative time between those two. I'm going to play you a clip. And you're going to hear Representatives Hakeem Jeffries, who's a Democrat from New York, Steve Cohen, a Democrat of Tennessee, Eric Swalwell of Democrat of California, who was interested in the presidency but not anymore, and Sheila Jackson Lee. And they are combating with Lewandowski, and we'll also hear how Lewandowski responded. This is cut number two.
Are you the hitman, the bagman, the lookout, or all of the above?
I think I'm the good-looking man, actually.
You didn't think that was illegal to obstruct justice?
Congressman, the president just asked me anything illegal.
Are you ashamed of the words that you wrote down?
President Swalwell, I'm very happy of what I've written, but you're welcome to read it if you'd like.
You should be here to be telling the truth,
Lewandowski,
because the truth will set you free and the American people. I yield back.
The time of the gentlelady has expired. The witness may answer the question.
I don't believe there was a question, Congressman.
Very well.
Yes, there was.
Could you repeat the question? I didn't hear it.
I'd be happy to repeat the question.
Just a rant.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's the way it went yesterday with Corey.
How many hours was that?
It was 4 to 5 hours, I'm told.
I'm going to go back and watch that. That just looked like a blast.
Yeah, it did sound pretty fun, didn't it?
But Corey Lewandowski, apparently this was planned. I mean, he wasn't going to go in there. And if you've ever watched these hearings, let's face it, Lewandowski was right there. He didn't get a question. They grandstand.
Right.
They get up there and they just attack the witness.
These hearings, even when Republicans are in charge,
yes,
are the biggest joke in Washington.
Yeah.
Because it's all, I'm not even going to try to do the hat and cattle.
All hat, no cattle.
Yeah, I'll botch that like a presidential candidate did in 2016. But it's all show. You know, it's all theater. And Republicans, what I used to get frustrated about is they both Republicans and Democrats have these hearings and they spend hours and hours and we're paying them to do that and keep the lights on in the Capitol. But they don't do anything meaningful. No legislation. I mean, nothing of purpose gets done. And the hearings, and even if you lie at the hearing, you don't get held accountable, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. So it's all television, ratings, you know, who can get the other person to trip up. But I'll almost guarantee you that our founders did not set up the Congress and the hearing process so that we could have theater.
Yes.
It was supposed to be used for good purposes.
And to bring in witnesses and to get to the truth of a matter.
Right.
Or to bring in experts and to ask them questions. And sometimes, I guess, they have hearings that do that. But
some are good.
But yeah. I think what we are seeing, what that farce was, and I really haven't watched it. I have read stuff about what these exchanges, but just listening to that, all the things that you said, it's grandstanding, want to be shown on TV. But then also, you know what? They'll take clips, I'm guessing. They'll take clips, and when it's re-election time, their ads will have, you know, Sheila Jackson Lee grilling one of President Trump's criminal, you know, allies, Corey Lewandowski. And so those were, I mean, to ask somebody who has to be there, they're subpoenaed, you know, unless you want to go through all the legal wranglings of not showing up and ignoring a subpoena from Congress. But they're there. I know they're not guests like you invite over for tea, but you should treat them at least a little bit decently and to question them and give them multiple choice, you know, which type of operative for the mafia, you know, for organized crime would you, you know, characterize yourself as?
Yeah.
Well, what do you expect? Corey Lewandowski says, well, I'm the good looking guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you turn the questioning into a farce, the answers are going to be farcical.
And I think that's what Lewandowski, who is, you know, familiar with the way things operate, obviously, in Washington, he just decided, you know what, if you're going to be snarky with me, I'm going to be snarky with you.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to reflect your attitude to me. And so he just did that. And, you know, there's talk this morning of Nadler and some of the others that they're going to charge him with contempt or something of that nature. But he showed up. And he did answer the question. Now, they didn't like the answers.
Well, you show contempt to him, he shows contempt back.
Yeah.
I don't think it's contempt of Congress. It's contempt toward the Democrats in Congress.
Exactly.
I'm not sure. Listen, this is all, Walker, you're absolutely right. This is all just a game up there in D.C. And the Republicans do it too. I'm not sure how we break this dysfunction in D.C. I really don't. I'm just not sure how this is going to heal itself because this is absolute dysfunction. Mm-hmm. They're not doing anything, and they're making matters worse. I don't know where this is going to wind up. So, anyway, but that bit of cheery news.
Well, let's go to some good news. I know you folks talked yesterday about a major win for a couple of business owners in Phoenix against an ordinance there. These two ladies, and we're going to hear from them, Joanna Duca and Brianna Koski. They run a shop that basically they produce wedding invitations, et cetera, et cetera. And it's becoming kind of a familiar story, but different venues across this country where, you know, some homosexuals wanted them to print up invitations for a homosexual wedding. They are both Christians, and they didn't didn't want to do that because it would go against their Christian beliefs and what they believed to be their freedom of speech rights. And so, of course, the case goes to court. But yesterday, the Arizona Supreme Court said these ladies are right, and they do still have First Amendment rights to express their beliefs, and they don't have to use their artistic abilities in their business to express something that they do not believe in. So they've been interviewed, Joanna and Brianna, and also they were on various outlets. Fox and Friends had them on this morning, and they also had one of their lawyers, Kristen Wagner, from the ADF. A little bit of that interview, cut number four.
The heart of this case is the question of, can the government force artists by threat of jail time to create art that promotes messages inconsistent with their values? And, you know, for Brianna and I, that includes certain messages about marriage that violate our faith. It includes messages that promote racism or incite violence, exploit women, or demean any member of any community, including the LGBT community.
Sure. And I don't know if Joanna said this or not, I can't remember, but we do serve everybody and love right. everybody, but it's just certain messages that we cannot promote in our business because of our faith.
The message, very clear message of the court, and it says it in its decision, is that free speech and free exercise rights aren't limited to soft whisperings that go on in the privacy of our homes, but that all Americans have the right to be able to speak and to create art that's consistent with who they are. So that right extends to all Americans, not just those who share Brianna mm-hmm. and Joanna's beliefs.
So we've had a number of court cases now that seem to favor the belief that whether you're a Christian cake maker or a Christian florist or in this case, a printing organization, yes. a business, that you don't have to go against your beliefs and your artistic freedoms in order to abide by these so-called non-discrimination ordinances. Now, let's be very clear. This Phoenix ordinance is not going away.
Right.
The Arizona Supreme Court was basically saying they have First Amendment rights to express their Christian beliefs, their religious beliefs, and that includes in the products that they produce, and they can't be forced to go against that. But that ordinance is still in place, and it could play out against Christians who may sell hammers.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, these ladies never refused service to anyone.
No.
From that event never occurred. Mm-hmm. It was, this case was a preemptive case where the lawyers argued that this Phoenix ordinance, if a party took it up against the business, would hurt the business.
Mm-hmm.
But even some of these mainstream outlets like The Hill and Fox it's a confusing headline because they're saying Arizona court backs business owners who refuse to make same-sex invitations. But that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
That's never occurred.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hypothetical, mm-hmm. the court case. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why the confusion is out there, but there's never been someone come into their business saying, will you make me homosexual? Will you make me invitations for my homosexual wedding? And they said, no, we're not going to do that.
Unlike the Baronel Stutzman.
Yeah, Baronel Stutzman, that actually happened.
Yes.
And so that's important to note.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be, now not everyone's going to like this on either side, but I think going forward, this is looking like where this is all going to shake out. And that is, when you have wedding service providers, because that seems to be the center of the controversy, you are going to have to sell products in general to anyone who walks in the door.
Mm-hmm.
So you bake cakes, a gay couple should be able to come in and buy a cake. But in terms of you specifically being forced to do things that promote that wedding,
mm-hmm.
that same-sex wedding, Christians, I think, are going to get a carve out. That seems to be where some of this is. Now, that's not going to make everyone happy. Homosexuals are going to say, no, they should be forced to promote our weddings. Christians are going to, you know, be forced to say, if they don't like selling a cake off the shelf, they're going to be forced to say, well, you're going to have to serve them. So this looks like where we may be headed. So anyway, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we got more, including good news about Christianity in America.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Dr. Alex McFarland of Exploring the Word.
All across America, West Coast, East Coast, the Midwest, we meet people that have either come to the Lord or come back to the Lord through the broadcast.
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, when we go to Israel and we visit the Sea of Galilee, we stay at a hotel right there on the seashore. It's going to be wonderful. You're going to get up every morning that we're there and you're going to say, hey, this is the place where Jesus walked on the water. This is the place where Jesus went on the boat with his disciples. This is the place where Jesus had much of his ministry, Capernaum and places around there. So it's going to be a wonderful time there on the Sea of Galilee. In fact, we're going to take a boat ride out on the Sea of Galilee. That's just a couple of the days that we're in Israel seeing the sites that you've read about your whole life in the Bible. So for more information on this March 12th through the 20th tour, go to the website twholyland.com. Again, March 12th through the 20th, go to the website twholyland.com for all the information.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. A big win for religious liberty and artistic expression. That story coming up.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The Arizona Supreme Court handed a pair of millennial business owners a big win the other day. Joanna Duca and Brianna Koski are the owners of Brush and Nib, a company that makes custom wedding invitations. They are also devout Christians. Alliance Defending Freedom sued the city of Phoenix over that non-discrimination law. The law would have forced artists to design and create custom wedding invitations that conflict with their religious beliefs, specifically same-sex marriages. Those who refuse to do business with such marriages would face up to 6 months in jail and $2,500 in fines. The Arizona Supreme Court says that law is unconstitutional. They said the city cannot violate the freedom of speech or freedom of religion of an artist. A good day for religious liberty in America. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson. In just over 10 minutes, we're going to have Glenn Stanton, who's with Focus on the Family. He's the author of a tremendous new book, The Myth of the Dying Church. Folks, have you been told and bought the line that real Christianity is shrinking in the United States? This book is subtitled, How Christianity is Actually Thriving in America and the World. So, got some great news coming up in just about 10 minutes. Hey, before we move on to some of the other news, we were talking about, and I just heard Todd Starnes referencing the Arizona case that we were talking about before the break. And Walker, you made a very good point during the break that this is a pretty complicated issue because there are companies that refuse to do business with Christians and conservatives, and they don't seem to fall, run afoul of these kinds of laws.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been various, tech companies and other kind of companies that, for whatever reason, have turned down doing business while providing different services for conservative groups. Here at AFA, we've experienced that with a couple of different companies where they don't really want to do business with us because we're so-called controversial. And that's legal for a company to deny services or terminate services, as long as the contract outlines that provision. But when you get into this with the artist over in Arizona and others, the traditional thought has been, well, they're required to provide products to the public, to everyone, just so long as it doesn't violate their religious beliefs. And I think I would agree with that in principle. But as far as the law goes, it seems that you can really turn down services for whatever reason. And now we're not saying to not do sell cupcakes because you don't like the other person. But legally speaking, it seems like that if you're the sole proprietor and the owner of the business, you can turn down services for any reason.
And right? And we have noted that since President Trump got elected, this hasn't happened as much as it did the first year. There were people who were Trump supporters, wore a Trump hat, whatever. They were drummed out of restaurants and told, we're not serving your kind here. So it's a complicated issue, and I'm not a lawyer, but it's just complicated, period, as you're mm-hmm. talking about. So anyway, we did get a good report out of Arizona. So for the time being, we'll rejoice in that, even though this issue is not settled. All right, Fred, let's talk about how many people live in America. Shall we?
I think there's about 365 million, give or take a million.
Okay. 365? Okay. 365. I was thinking 330 million, but you know what? What's 30 million, 40 million, you know, here or there? What's
another 30 million came across the border in the last year.
What's another 300? What's another 300 million?
Something like that. So when former Vice President Joe Biden, out on the campaign trail, issued a number yesterday about how many women there are in the country, it puzzled some people, including Ben Shapiro, who was on Fox and Friends this morning. So I'm going to play you a clip of Joe Biden talking about tax credits for women in the workforce. Now I want you to listen carefully how many women in America, he says, are going to benefit from this. And then we'll hear some comments from Ben Shapiro. Cut number six.
You get a tax break for a racehorse. Why couldn't we provide an $8,000 tax credit for everybody who has child care costs? It would put 720 million women back in the workforce. It would increase the GDP to sound like a wonk here by about 0.8%. It would grow the economy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that doesn't add up. I will say that this is all baked into the cake for Joe Biden. I mean, we all know that he is stumbling into objects and that he is just searching for an early bird dinner at Denny's and drinking cans of Ensure and forgetting where he is on a routine basis. But I think that's baked into the cake. I think everybody sort of knows that. In fact, I take the perspective that in the general election, it might not be bad for him to look senile and old and ineffectual because, honestly, at least he doesn't look dangerous. Right? I mean, if you're trying to run somebody against President Trump and you don't want to scare the American population, Joe Biden is the face of not scary because mm-hmm. what's scary about a guy walking around with tennis balls on the bottom of his
Wow. That's Ben Shapiro. Please send your critical emails to Ben Shapiro. I don't know what to make of that. That he just insulted.
You know, traditionally
people with walkers.
Traditionally, age has been off limits to make fun of someone. And I'm not going to make fun of Biden, although I do think it's kind of humorous. But when you run for president of the United States, you welcome criticism. You open yourself up
right.
to public critique and or criticism. And so in that sense, I don't mind talking about his age because that's a relevant factor in whether you want to vote for him or not. And he's always had gaffe problems, but these are not, I don't know if these are gaffe problems because it's every day.
But where do you come up with the number 720 million women?
I have no idea where he would come up with that.
Where does that?
He put in the U.S. population 10 years ago and did times two. I mean, that's the only thing I could guess.
Either that or it was 70, the number is 72 million or I don't even know how you'd get that number benefited by, you know, he's talking about, I don't know what he was thinking, but you know, to Walker's point, it's, we're not just talking about his age because President Trump is not a young man either.
No.
But we are talking about his age and the fact that in some cases, maybe many cases, when you reach that age, well, like President Trump says, you lose your fastball.
Yep.
That's what he said about Joe Biden. So this is everyone's noticing this. President Trump's campaign put out a video. Oh, you got something on that, all right?
We have the ad that President Trump, and I mean, politics is a brutal game.
And this is quoting Democrats and leftists.
All right, so this is a Trump campaign ad that features Joe Biden's gaffes. Cut number eight.
President Obama reportedly told Joe Biden directly, quote, "You don't have to do this, Joe. You really don't."
That is not a joke. That is a natural fact.
I think Biden looked unsteady at many points.
Play the radio. Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night, the phone.
There's a lot of people who are concerned about Joe Biden's ability to carry the ball all the way across the end line without fumbling.
Go to Joe 30330. Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids. We choose truth over facts.
I want to be clear. I'm not going nuts.
There are definitely moments where you listen to Joe Biden and you just wonder.
That was Cory Booker.
Yeah, those were commentators and politicians
Democrats.
On the Democrat side.
Yes.
Who were making comments about Joe Biden. And look, this is only going to be exacerbated as on the campaign trail as it intensifies, because we're not even in primary season yet. And the reason I say that is during primary season, as a candidate, you go to this diner in Iowa, and then you travel 2 hours down the road, and you go to this speaking event, and then you go to this speak. You're doing two or three of those a day. Not even know you're. It's worse than being in a rock band. Mm-hmm. You don't know what town you're
in.
It's
tough.
And it is a grueling process. And part of what is good about that process is it does winnow out pretenders, not just on the basis of age, mm-hmm. but people who do not know their stuff. They're on the campaign trail, making speeches, giving interviews, going on this radio station, and they're getting grilled, and you better know your stuff. So this process is grueling, and I'm afraid these kinds of mistakes are only going to get worse. And as I just was reading an article yesterday and pulled it for maybe tomorrow, whatever, but it showed that Gallup poll and then one other poll, I can't remember, but the majority of Democrats do not want a radical nominee.
Yeah.
54-41 said, this was the Gallup poll, they want the presidential field to come back more towards the center. So what's happening, though, is that these candidates, with the exception of Joe Biden, are going off the deep end to the left. Mm-hmm. So you may be left, if you're a Democrat, you may be left with Joe Biden.
Well, and I honestly think in the back rooms of the Democratic Party, when they're looking and they're seeing, like, a poll out today has Joe Biden at 31% and Elizabeth Warren at 25%.
What's Joe Biden's numbers?
31.
31. All right. So that his lead has shrunk.
Yes. And Elizabeth Warren, 25. But to your point, Elizabeth Warren is this radical, radical leftist.
Very left.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she was on with Steve Colbert last night, and he challenged her on, middle class tax increases.
Wall Street doesn't want her.
No. Because what she'll do to the economy.
Yes. Right.
That's the problem.
Right.
So Joe, a lot of people think, okay, I'm safe with Joe. It's going to be more the traditional Democrat. But now you've got all of these gaffes. I mean, Jimmy Carter in the last few days was questioned about, what do you think of Joe Biden? And Jimmy Carter, who's now 95, said, I don't think I could have been president at 80 years of age. That 80-year-old cannot handle the pressures of the job.
Which, if Joe Biden is elected, he will turn 80 during his first term.
Right? As will Bernie Sanders.
Right.
I don't know. I just don't know if Biden can handle the presidency physically.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he's gaffing every day on the campaign trail that's not even heated up yet, then I just don't, and not to mention, I think if you think Hillary Clinton was a bad candidate, Biden would be a bad candidate in my view for the Democrats.
Yeah.
And I think that's why many of them are leaning towards Warren.
Well, but the problem is, does middle America, would they feel comfortable enough voting for an Elizabeth Warren? Because it's not only it's Kamala Harris, it's Cory Booker. I mean, Bernie Sanders comes next. Was 31 Biden this morning, 25 Elizabeth Warren. I think Bernie Sanders is the upper teens.
If she was more moderate,
she would be tough. She would be a threat to unseat the president.
If she had some of Biden's views, of his moderate views, but the energy that she had, keep the energy and everything that she has and the speaking skills.
Mm-hmm. And what's happening is she is drawing large numbers of the far left wing of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
They're coming out in droves. They're energetic. So the Democrats are not necessarily in a good place here.
No.
Because they want someone like Joe, but I don't think they really want Joe Biden.
No.
But they've got nobody else in that whole field. Mm-hmm. They've got nobody else that can use the mantle of moderate Democrat, even though Joe Biden's not moderate. He's a lefty, too. Mm-hmm.
They seem to have this problem repeatedly, at least the last two cycles. I think President Obama was a good candidate from a Democrat's viewpoint.
Right.
But Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, if they pick him, if the primary voters pick Biden, I mean, that's two election cycles in a row where they just hadn't picked the best candidate.
Right. All right. Well, we're going to change horses here midstream and talk about the church in America and around the world. We want to welcome Glenn Stanton, who's Director of Global Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family and author of The Myth of the Dying Church. And by the way, we want to mention he's a friend of AFR's Steve Jordahl, or maybe Steve Jordahl is a friend of Glenn Stanton. Either way you cut it. Glenn, welcome to Today's Issues.
Well, it's good to be with you. And not only am I a friend of Steve's, I'm his greatest fan. I'm president of his fan club.
President of his fan club. Well, you know, I'm not sure that's going to get you much here. No, we're big fans of Steve Jordahl. He's a fine Christian man, excellent at his what he does, very passionate about the Lord. And so, anyway, he said, when is Glenn coming on? And we said 10:45. He said, oh man, we'll just tell him that I said hello. So, anyway, Glenn, I wanted to have you on. I don't know where I saw an article or something about this book. It's called The Myth of the Dying Church: How Christianity is Actually Thriving in America and Around the World. Now, the quote on the front cover is from a Harvard Indiana University study, and it says, quote, "Intense religion in the United States is persistent and exceptional in ways that do not fit the secularization thesis," end quote. Glenn, how can that be, a little tongue-in-cheek here, since we absolutely know that the percentage of people who are leaving the church and becoming a part of the secular society is skyrocketing?
Well, I love the tongue-in-cheek part there, right. And that is exactly right. We just know, you know, quote-unquote, that what you just said is true because we hear it so many times, and that is what drove me to write the book, particularly in my position here at Focus on the Family, because we see that kind of information, things like 70% of young people by the time they hit college will, you know, have denied the faith, and the nuns, those who, you know, claim no particular religious faith, it's the fastest growing form of belief or unbelief in the nation. And I even, you know, a couple months ago saw an article on Fox News that said essentially atheism is the fastest growing and largest group of, you know, religious people in the nation. None of those things are true. And so I wrote the book out of looking very carefully, not just at any research here or there, but studying the leading sociologists of religion from leading academic institutions, like that study that you just quoted from Harvard and Indiana University. These people are telling us not only is Christianity doing well, but some very interesting things are happening. When you look at declines, people leaving the faith, that is nearly to a person leaving the liberal churches, leaving the moderate compromising churches that are tossing Christian orthodoxy over the side of the boat. The churches that are biblical, that are faithful, that are vibrant, that are calling people to real worship of a God who really does save us from real sin, those churches are holding absolutely steady and, in fact, in many ways, increasing.
You know, Glenn, one of the things you say in your book, and this was very surprising to me. Now, I absolutely agree with you on the entire premise of your book, and have read some of this information before. But one of the things you said did surprise me. You said more Americans in raw numbers and as a percentage of the population attend church today than at any other time in our nation's history, including the colonial days. I got to say that surprised me.
Well, it has surprised me the first time that I saw it. And Rodney Stark, who used to teach at the University of Washington, he's a sociologist. Now he teaches at Baylor University, and just one of the leading thinkers in the history of the church. You know, his famous book, The Rise of Christianity, just does phenomenal work. I read that in one of his books. He charts it out like every 50 years, showing from, 1750 all the way up to the present age, how actually, surprisingly, there weren't that many people attending churches in terms of being a percentage of the population in the colonial days. And he shows that it increases every 50 years. Now, a lot of this was like, the guy who owns the car dealership in town, he wants to join the church because that's good for business and things like that. This doesn't mean that great, solid, rock and roll Christians that were, super, super folks, that was increasing necessarily, although it has been. What it is, and I ended the book with this, that this idea that we are seeing the darkest days of the church today and that the glory days are in the past is not only bad sociology, it's bad theology. What is the mechanism that empowers and drives the church, the spread of the church throughout the world? It is what we saw at Pentecost. That is the Holy Spirit. And we read at Pentecost, the Lord was daily bringing and increasing the numbers of the church, those that were being saved. Now, the Holy Spirit has not taken a vacation. He has not taken a break. He doesn't have the flu. He's not ill. He continues to press age through age through history, convicting people of sin, drawing people to truth, and he has done that every day since Pentecost. He cannot do otherwise. And so we need to know that, yes, the Word of God keeps pressing on. The Holy Spirit keeps convicting people. Two of the things that I saw in my research, I look at Young Life as an iconic Christian organization working with young people. I looked at their annual reports for the last couple of decades. They are reaching more people, having more decisions for Christ than they ever have in the history of their organization since 1941. Same thing with InterVarsity, who reaches out to college students. They are having more decisions for Christ, more organizations on college campuses, more volunteers, raising more money than they ever had. The gospel is moving on, and God's word is not returning void. It is pushing through history like a freight train.
Glenn, this is Walker. Let me ask you this, and I am sure you hint at this or talk about it in your book, but if the church in America is healthier than surveys might show, then, or maybe the surveys are just wrong, how come it seems like the culture in and of itself seems to be declining, the moral state of the culture?
Well, that's a good question. And one first point is the church being healthier than it's ever been. Now, there's a qualification that's very important there. What I'm addressing in the book is just sheer attendance. There are more people attending solid biblical Bible teaching churches than ever before. Now, in the book, and I admit this, does this mean that we have a generation of super Christians, those that know their Bible, know theology, are sharing the gospel, things like that? I don't address that, and I would be inclined to say that no, we're not raising super Christians today. There is not this dramatic revival of great Christians. But in terms of, is the church shrinking? Are people walking away from the church? That is absolutely not true. Now, in terms of what you just said, yes, Christians and the increase in Christians means an increase of salt and light. And there is an increase of salt and light today. I mean, the things that you see out there in the culture, I mean, you guys, there's a radio show, national radio show that goes out. You guys are talking about issues every day. You can go anywhere in the country and tune in to the radio, good Christian radio stations. You can buy good Christian books in the airport, in Walmart, all over the place. And so, yes, there is this influence, but we also, we need to understand that the scriptures are very clear. Jesus is very clear that, yes, while growing numbers of Christians show no growing numbers of salt and light, that Satan is working overtime as well. And in fact, the more vibrant the church is, the more he works to overcome and to bring darkness upon our land. That is very important for us to understand. The early church, I mean, things were terribly dark in those days, but the Christians stood strong against them, and they were signs of light and salt in the community. But it's the same as today. I mean, there is that continued battle between dark and light, and it will continue until Jesus comes.
Glenn, it's Fred Jackson here. We just have a couple of minutes. If indeed the numbers of Christians are growing across the country, do you think it should have some kind of political impact?
Well, I tell you what, there are political philosophers and political scientists who will tell you that no, Christians have a huge political impact. And this is seen, you know, in the last couple of elections, even for president and at state level and things like that. Now, you know, Christians aren't dominating politics, but they are taking their faith into the voting booth. They are being very vibrant. I mean, I interact with, through my work here at Focus on the Family, lots of liberal people, lots of Democrats, lots of gay and lesbian individuals. And they will say, you know what, we relish and are actually jealous of the political influence that Christians have in the world today. And that's simply because they vote. They vote in big numbers. They're informed about what's going on in the world today. And so I think that's very, very important as well.
Our guest has been Glenn Stanton. He's Director of Global Family Formation Studies at Focus on the Family, and he's author of the book we've been discussing with him, The Myth of the Dying Church, How Christianity is Actually Thriving in America and the World. Actually, there's some great news about what God is doing around the world in this book as well. Glenn, where can folks pick up a copy of The Myth of the Dying Church?
You know what? They can get it from Focus on the Family. Just go online, focusonthefamily.com, or call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY, or simply get it at any of your favorite Christian booksellers in your community or online.
Okay. Glenn, thank you for all that you do and for writing this book. It was a great encouragement, and I recommend that people pick up a copy and see what God is doing here and abroad. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, we're going to take a five-minute break for news, and when we come back, there will be more great information, things you can use to equip yourself and get active. Again, five-minute break for news, more directly ahead.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.